Welcome back to Mental Health Integration. We are now in week 3 and we are asking the question, what's it like? Last week we did so much work on understanding what mental illnesses were and then definitionally understanding what they are. This week we're asking different questions. We're asking, what do they feel like? How do they affect people? And what actually occurs in a mental illness, not in your brain so much as in your life. And so this is going to be a much more personal week. To start out, when most people think about mental illness, they think about pictures that look something like this. This is somebody depressed who's sitting on the ground. We used to joke in mental health groups, a bunch of individuals of us that would get together, that the joke was that people with depression clearly didn't have chairs because they were always depicted on the ground, curled up. But that's the idea. It hurts, and there's just nothing going on. It feels like being with somebody but feeling alone. And being so consumed with grief, or being in the middle of beauty but not being able to see any of the beauty because it's just too much, it's too heavy. It feels like mental anguish, like the world just hurts and you just want to get out of your own skin. That's normally what we think of when I think of mental illness. It's kind of these pictures. But that's not how all of the pictures of mental illness start. You know, a lot of these disorders are late onset. They don't start when you're 2 or 3 or 4. The majority of them start before you're 20. And they can start before you're 14 or before you're 16. But they generally hit a little bit later in life. And before that, generally you have a life that you're already living. Generally, when you start your childhood at 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, it looks a little bit more like this. And this, just so you know, is my elementary school class. And I am the kid in the upper right-hand corner in the striped blue shirt. I was always tall. I wasn't that tall. They had me up taller for some reason, but that was me. I was the nerdiest kid you will ever meet in your life, a pretty happy kid. I wanted to be an astrophysicist. I wanted to be MacGyver and create things. I wanted to build and do and have so much fun, and I wanted to be fast, and I wasn't very fast, and I wanted to play soccer, but I wasn't very good at soccer, and I wanted to build things and be an engineer, and I was a miserable engineer. But I was smart. I had a lot of fun. And I wanted to know everything about constellations and stars. And so I learned everything that I could. And later in life, when I was 14 years old, my uncle came to live with us. And he had just had his world fall apart. My uncle was married. He was living in Texas. And then in the course of a day, his life changed. He was feeling really depressed and down. He had stopped taking his medications. He got a call in from his boss. He went into his boss's office, and his boss said, "Hey, you're done. You're fired. You are not cutting it here at work." So he went to call his wife at home, and she said, "If you don't have a job, you don't need to come home. We're done." And in the course of an hour, he lost his job, his house, and his marriage. And so he came to live with us. He was my mom's brother. And he didn't have another place to go. So after not seeing him for years, he showed up at our doorstep and came to live with us. We had an extra bedroom. During that year, he taught me the fine point of how to watch a football game. how to understand when a linebacker hits somebody, what that means, the fine points of cheering and how loud you must cheer, how you must scream at the top of your lungs because clearly your TV can hear you. And he also taught me how to bowl. It was, you know, an education in everything that I'd missed in life. And by the end of that time, he spent 9 months with us. He had stabilized back out. He was back on his medications. He was doing well. How that happened was pretty simple and straightforward. Ron had bipolar disorder, type 1. He had these huge mood swings, but he also had medications that worked for him. He didn't like the way they felt. He didn't like how they affected his moods. He didn't like how they made him feel kind of numb, but they worked. And all he had to do was start the pills over again, and he started to stabilize. My mom and dad tried to figure out what it was that was going on, because they didn't know anything about bipolar disorder. So they started reading every book they could. They read books about kids, and books about adults, and books about medications. They started going with Ron to his appointments at therapy and to support groups. They started taking him to psychiatric meetings with a psychiatrist. And before you know it, he was doing well again. For my parents, it was also a heck of an education because they learned so much about bipolar disorder specifically. Fast forward a few months, he was ready to get back out on his own. He had been living with us for 9 months. He'd stabilized out. He had a job. He was building cabinets. He had found a room with a guy where he could pay and start his life again. So he did. He moved out. And then 3 months later, I went on a school trip to Europe. It was this once-in-a-lifetime thing, you know. My parents had never done anything like that, but they said, how can you turn down a trip to England? You need to go. So I did. And they put their son on a monster. They put their son on a plane, and a monster came back. Everything fell apart. I had all of the symptoms manifest of bipolar disorder type 1. It was awful. I started having these incredible moments of depression. So dark, I can barely explain what they were like. They were crushing. I was completely non-functional. I would just curl up into my comforter on my bed and weep. And that's all I could do. It just hurt so badly. Not like physical pain, but like a mental anguish that was completely consuming. And then I would hit highs that almost felt like being an exposed nerve. Everything would get on my nerves. I had a super short fuse for any sort of thing going wrong. My parents would joke around that I had Superman syndrome because I would fly around at what seemed like a million miles an hour, thinking that I could solve all the world's problems if the world could just keep up with how fast I could move and talk and work and be. And if the world should just keep up with me, then we could get this thing handled. But it couldn't. So I was frustrated all the time. And thus the exposed nerve. Because with all of that energy and all of that passion and all of that aliveness, also came this incredible sensitivity to how much the world was not like what I wanted it to be. I didn't exist in a middle state either. I existed in one of those two states, in this incredible high or this incredible low, and I would oscillate between the two and just bounce back and forth, but spend nearly no time in the middle. The transitions would happen so fast. I remember within just a couple weeks, my parents got me in to see a psychiatrist. Handy that my uncle had found psychiatrists. He sat down, and in my first meeting with him, he correctly diagnosed me with bipolar disorder. He saw an entire cycle high and low while he was in his office that day, which is not common, but is me. I was diagnosed and I started meds that very day. We started with what worked for my uncle. I turned out to be allergic to it. Then we moved on to another med. And then another. And then another. And then another. I spent the next about year just bouncing from med to med to med, hoping that we could find anything that would work well. Finally, at about the year mark, we found something that kind of sort of worked. And made it so I could at least function without being a suicide risk. When I was first diagnosed, it was one of the worst cases of bipolar disorder that my psychiatrist had ever seen. People don't oscillate back and forth like this, this hard, this fast, in the middle of your teenage years when you are so susceptible to thinking you're nothing anyway and live. He told my parents in that first meeting, he pulled my mom and dad aside and I got to talk to his wife for a few minutes. He told them, kids like Brandon, they don't last. So he might not last 3 months, he might last 6 months. But I really doubt he'll make it to Christmas. And my parents had to sit there knowing that the kindest advice that my psychiatrist was to give them was that I probably wouldn't be around for very long. And if they could at least expect it, at least they wouldn't be blindsided. My parents, being who they were, took his advice to heart and politely told him that that was terrible advice and they were never going to give up on me. So immediately we started meds and we tried everything. Immediately they hunkered down at home to try and make sure that I was going to be okay. We didn't worry about grades the next year because that wasn't the function. It was between my freshman and sophomore years of high school when I was diagnosed. And my sophomore year of high school, I managed to carry a 1.3 GPA. It turns out that you can fail band and that you can't fail a job requirements course because I failed everything else. I worked as hard as I could, and I was non-functional that year. Absolutely non-functional. I would wake up every morning. I would eat my breakfast so that I could take my pills. I would go to school. I would make it through one or two periods until the depression or something hurt so bad that I had to go. I would hide in a bathroom stall between periods, and sometimes during periods. I would call home and tell my mom that it had been too much. And I needed these periods excused, or this period excused. I would go make it to lunch. I would see a few of my friends, but I started isolating myself from a lot of my social networks because it hurt too bad. Then I would try to make it through the rest of the day. Oftentimes I wouldn't. So I would walk the few miles home because I just couldn't manage to make it through another class. When I got home, I would go up to my room, I would hit my knees, I would curl up into the side of my comforter on my bed, and I would sob because it just hurt so bad. We called that crashing. And then I would go downstairs. I was a drummer, and there's nothing in the world that can relieve more stress than hitting things as hard as you can until you feel better. So I did. I would play almost every day until I broke a stick. And then I would have to buy new sticks. A lot of new sticks. Because I went through a lot of them. Because it was the only thing I could do to make the pain go away. That's how I lived every day for the first year, basically. I would have psychiatric appointments once a week. We would go see my psychiatrist, and he would adjust my meds. I was a good client. I always told him what was going on with me. I was always upfront and honest. And my parents always came to my appointments so that they could fill in the gaps because there were things I didn't remember often about what had happened in the last 2 weeks. We worked through medication after medication, like you heard. Finally, when we got to something that kind of sort of worked, I managed to pull myself up to a C average at school. I managed to start passing things. I managed to start functioning a little bit. I went to a learning center to relearn how to be a student. I had had an exceptional memory growing up. I hadn't had to work hard in order to do school well. And now I had to work really hard to do school well, and I didn't have any study habits. So I had to go back to a learning center to learn how to study and learn how to read well. During that time, I didn't die, obviously. My parents kept a secret to me that my bipolar was so bad because they thought that I would feel hopeless if I ever found out. So instead, they just let me continue doing life and continue doing the best I could. And I did the best I could. And the best I could my sophomore year was failing at school, but succeeding and staying alive. My junior year, about halfway through my junior year, we had a break with medication. Not that we had stopped doing it, but we hit a break. We found something that worked incredibly well. And in that moment, it was like my life changed. The sky parted, the angels sang, there was hope, there was life, there was goodness. After living in an episode where there was mania and depression, cycling back and forth quickly with no middle, for the better part of 2 years, I finally existed as a normal person again. I could finally think again. I could finally process again. I could finally feel joy again. I wasn't vomiting because of the side effects of my pills every day. I didn't feel like I couldn't remember anything. Going from remembering anything basically I had ever heard to not remembering what I had for lunch an hour before was a big change. But now I could remember anything again. Anything except the holes that were there because of all the medications I'd been on. But, you know, you take some, you win some. And then you lose some too. So, through all that, I learned a lot about myself. Because I'd been through two of the most agonizing years of my life. And I had survived. But what I had lost during those years was pretty profound. What's the value of this line? When I was going through my lowest points in bipolar disorder, my mental picture of myself was as a charcoal line scribbled across a concrete wall. That this was something that didn't improve things, it marred things. It wasn't good, it just made things ugly. It wasn't happy, it was just bleh. And when people came into contact with it, it would rub off. Not that they would get bipolar disorder, but it would stain their life. It would break them. It would make them hurt, make them sad. Because this depression was so consuming that it sucked the joy out of everything around me. That's the reason that I isolated myself and that I stayed where I was. It was because I didn't want to contaminate the world around me. I didn't want to break the people around me. I wanted them to experience life on their own. And I didn't want them to get marred by my problems. What my parents did, though, was different, because they modeled something really powerful. All they said was, we'll get through it. Whatever it is, we'll get through it. If this is the worst that it can be, that's fine. We'll get through it. If this isn't the worst yet, that's fine too. We'll get through it. It changed my perspective dramatically because they just kept going. My family members just kept being there. We kept going to psychiatrist's office. We kept going to therapist's office. We kept working until we got the thing done. And the attitude wasn't, you need to do better, you need to do more. The attitude was, you will do your best, and we will get through this together. It was a model of what we can be as human beings. And I owe them my life. They know it too. Because I tell them on a regular basis that I am so, so grateful for them. And that's my experience with going through bipolar disorder. This incredible high, this incredible low, 2 years of struggling to find balance, and then I find the meds that made it right. During my 20s, I had to mourn the fact that I'd lost 2 years of my high school years, these years that were supposed to be some of the best of my life. At least that's the way high school dramas portray them, that I'd miss things like doing cross country or playing in larger bands, doing anything, that I'd miss 2 years basically, because my 2 years of high school were just consumed with staying alive. In fact, I didn't even get a yearbook those years. I didn't want one because I didn't want to remember. didn't want to have to think about it ever again. Now, my experience with bipolar disorder and a lot of people's experiences of other mental illnesses are incredibly familiar. They're incredibly common. There's elements that are the same. The element of being surprised. The element of feeling like there is no hope. The element of feeling like you're the only one who experiences this. The element of feeling like you're blindsided and you don't know what comes next because it hurts so bad. Of feeling out of control. Of feeling like you don't know if you can trust your own brain. There are so many things that we share with mental illnesses. And you don't have to have the worst case of bipolar disorder that your psychiatrist has ever seen for it to be awful. You don't have to have the worst case of depression your psychiatrist has ever seen for it to just be incapacitating. You don't need the worst of anything. In fact, in some cases, like bipolar disorder, the less severe a case, the more likely you are to commit suicide because you don't take it as seriously. It's not as much of an immediate threat, so you don't have to take it as seriously. Everyone has their own story with mental illness. I am not trying with my own story to undermine anybody else's and saying, but mine was worse than yours. Because your story is your story, and it has value. And it absolutely is. Our tolerance of pain is what our tolerance of pain is, and that doesn't make it good, bad, or otherwise. When we go through things this hard, at some point we surpass our tolerance, and we just survive. So, in a lot of ways, we're so far past what we can handle, it doesn't matter how hard it is what you go through. If it was past what you could handle, it just is. It's just consuming, and you just try to keep going through. I would urge you, after hearing this, that if you have a mental illness, take the time to write your own story. Take your time to think about it. Take some time to reflect on it. Take some time to understand it. And understand what it cost you. And if you need to, see a therapist to work through that. I had to. It was too big and too daunting. I needed to see a therapist in order to work through all of that. If you don't know anyone with a mental health issue, like we said earlier in this course, it's incredibly common. So please find someone, share stories, hear stories, learn, grow, develop. When you see mental illness as a face, when it looks like a person that you know and care for instead of as an abstract theological concept or an abstract societal construct, it'll serve you incredibly well because you can put a face to it and know what it looks like and feels like. Our stories are what make this thing possible, which is why we're going to continue looking at what things feel like in the next section. Thank you.